This is Rushda Majeed on 3rd November 2013. I am in Kabul, Afghanistan with Dr. Ashraf Ghani, who was the former Minister of Finance, and we are speaking about Afghanistan's National Solidarity Program. Dr. Ghani, thank you so much for speaking with the Innovations for Successful Societies. If I may start this conversation by asking you a little bit about a few words about the conditions here in Afghanistan in 2001 when a new government was formed, and what were some of the challenges to which you thought a program like the National Solidarity Program would be a possible solution?
Well, thank you for coming. Glad that you've undertaken the comparative research. In 2001, I returned to Afghanistan on December 21st, 2001, after having been away for 24 years. And when I landed at Bagram Airport, which was the only place where I could land because Kabul Airport was still heavily mined, the Shumali plane, which had been one of the greenest parts of the country, was totally devastated. I went through 10 provinces in 1 month. And there was physical devastation, signs of war. There was climatic devastation because 5 years of drought had turned everything into brown. And then there was psychological devastation. A woman always put their arms around themselves. They really did not feel that they could open up. I went to a village where my family has been for 600 years. And I embraced about 700 men. There was nothing but bones on them. At Kabul University, where I taught from 73 to 77, I saw my former colleagues. And they were a shell of their former selves. But, you know, in terms of statistics, Kabul of 70s was around 700,000. It had grown in 1992 to about 2.5 million. In 2001 December, it was around 400,000. Our son, who was at Stanford, then a junior at Stanford, came for a year to help rebuild the country. We could not find him a bed for 4 months. He was sleeping in a sleeping bag. I passed through Kabul south, driving, and I saw onions. This is within the old walls of the city. And they were packed. And I was surprised because... So I got down and asked. They were being sent to Peshawar. Kabul did not have the purchasing power to buy the onions that were produced within its half a mile radius. 5 million people had been made refugees. 1.5 million had been displaced. Our urban centers had been totally destroyed. The World Bank, at my request, estimated the damage between 77 and 2001, and it came to $240 billion. So that gives you the scale. The other side was, I spent Christmas in Peshawar among the refugees to take a stock, and people were just waiting to come back. So all the UN were estimating, 400,000 or something like that. And people just rushed back. But they came to a country that they both knew and didn't know. those who were born here and had lived were finding the devastation unbelievable. Those that were born abroad and had heard and sort of seen with their mind's eye the Afghanistan of their parents could not believe, because the Afghanistan that was described to them was not there. You know, this area of the city, we were among the first to start building here in 2002, was totally destroyed. I mean, Western Kabul was like an area after the Mongol invasion. It was just a series of ruins. And so the impetus was to literally create a core of solidarity. The idea was that rural Afghans were citizens of a new Afghanistan with rights and obligations. So we had a choice. I had spent 10 years at the World Bank, and then I was on secondment to the UN for a couple of months to put together the Bonn Agreement. But I wrote the plan for reconstruction of Afghanistan on September 11th. I knew that the world had changed, and after that I did not go back to the bank. And I resigned on February 1st, actually, 2002, because there was an imperative of duty. And there was a fundamental debate, you know, would we start top down or bottom up? Because that's the usual style. And my answer was that this debate was nonsense. They were saying that, you know, you could not begin with a marginal ministry in a half-destroyed country, etc., etc. So the answer was not to think planning, but think design. Because planning means, you know, you've solved the problem and you sort of go. Design means you have to figure the rules of the game. Shape the playing field and reshape the players in terms of rules that would change the face of a country. So what is it that we did? First was to say that a rural Afghan was an agent, not a recipient. Our greatest problem in accepting of this view was, ironically, with civil society. They preach participation, but they believe in hierarchy. They wanted to be in control of the lives of rural Afghans. So they knew best. Because of this, they vehemently opposed elections, elected councils.
The CDCs
were all opposing. No, these were not CDCs, because
before.
No, because we formed the council. Yeah, the idea. Sorry, that I misunderstood you. I'm too tired. The NGOs were opposing elected councils to be in charge of setting priorities. They were saying Afghans have traditional leaders, and therefore resources should be channeled through the NGOs to the so-called traditional leaders, who would then decide on priorities. And they were saying that I had come after 24 years and I was carrying foreign ideas. And my answer was very simple. I said, you know, what's your beef? If they voluntarily elect their traditional leaders, we will have confirmation that you're right. If they don't elect them, I'll have confirmation, but the source of legitimacy has to be the vote of the individual.
When you say they, Dr. Vani, who do you mean?
It's the NGOs.
So there were...
A lot of the NGOs were opposed to this, and so were our friends from the World Bank and other places.
Mm.
You know, with the exception of Scott. That's why I had to bring Scott. You know, he's one of my oldest friends, and you know, I called him in from Indonesia, and I said, I need you here. I mean, otherwise, we can't level the playing field. So empowerment, which is talked about every World Bank document and every NGO around the world, preaches it to each other in conferences, was the test. And of course, you know, I had the authority, so I told him it's either that or I won't give them any role. Period. So hierarchy was harnessed and the service of participation. Because as Minister of Finance, I could make those decisions. The second area where we faced immense resistance was in terms of gender participation. Because I argued that women, it to be on committees, on village councils. And they were again telling me, I have one woman. You know, because it's this so-called view of tradition. And I said, I'm the grandson of a woman who grew in exile in India, came as an educated woman, raised six sons and a daughter and all her grandchildren, and all of them went to college, not only in Afghanistan, but in the West, got PhDs. And that her land, a couple of thousand acres of land, were still being referred to as her lands while they belonged to her husband. So there's this misperceived view of women in Afghan society as passive. An agency applied to women. And as you've seen the analysis, against all odds, women's participation has proven a remarkable asset. And then came to prioritization. So the issue was, who would set priorities? And my view is that villagers should set priorities. Who knows their problems but better than themselves? And other actors, of course, had very different views. No, they should plan the priorities. And we arrived at a very small negative list of what they could not do, but a huge positive list.
Mm-hmm.
Then there are questions, you know, how do you create a nation? And the answer was that they have to have the same rights and obligations. So solidarity, I hope I've explained to you, it's to form the core of the social capital and then the institutional capital that would enable people to come together. This is like the French stone soup. And there's the story that three of Napoleon's soldiers went to a village hungry, and the villagers refused them because peasant villages would hide their assets. So they said, we know how to make stone soup. And they said, well, they all got very curious. And so they started boiling about 4 stones. And soon they start saying, you know, the soup would be excellent if you had this, you know, salt, etc. And soon enough, they had a feast. And this really happened in Herat. You know, I mean, before National Solidarity, a group of people had come from Iran. And they were living in total confusion. They didn't know what to do. But once National Solidarity came, because it organized them, it gave them the vehicle, they put 10 times the assets of National Solidarity into rebuilding the villages. So the solidarity is that national, which means that you look at all villages of Afghanistan, it's exactly the same way. And that meant very transparent criteria. So you begin from the poorest, the ecologically most marginal, and the areas where the largest numbers of internally displaced or refugees have returned, and work your way towards more strength. So at the village level, the dynamic changed fundamentally, and the net result was armed men were driven out of the villages through national solidarity. They found no space. And old leadership, roughly around 40%, made its reappearance, but 60% was new leadership. And it demonstrated that you could net the country again. Its most satisfying part was, last year, I think I went to a gathering of 1,700 representatives of national solidarity from across the length and breadth of the country. And their talk is of village as a unit. They have no disputes. They do not accuse each other of favoritism. They do not say that one village has received preferential treatment over the other, etc. If you go to a meeting of the governors of 34 provinces, all kinds of accusations are flung at each other. Any of the government. So, and the second part was the argument from other places, including international institutions, was, well, you cannot begin big. You have to begin small and scale up. And my argument was, it's nonsense. Why do I need to begin small? The country is not small. One has to come with parameters of design that solves the issue of scale from the beginning. And so we began with one district in every province. That was scale. You had to solve the problem by mobilizing the capabilities that existed. This meant reassembling people. For instance, we had a huge concentration of NGOs in cities. I didn't want the NGOs in cities. Urbanites can take care of themselves quite well, thank you very much. If they want to be our developmental partners, they have to be in the poorest part of the country. Why do they need to concentrate in the richest part of the country? So we shifted the parameters of their existence totally from areas of privilege to areas of poverty and exclusion. That meant they had the facility, but the other was, you know, we had to position them because they were used to a new form of patronage, where they replaced either the old Khans and Maliks, you know, the landed, or that they replaced the men with the gun, commanders. If you put, you know, it's not individuals or institutions, it's if you put the rules of the game in a manner that gives power, decision rights, over social agents to some others, they will exercise. So the rules have to be such that they really need to understand that they're facilitating. They're not deciding for. And that was repositioning. So their roles were very well defined in terms of facilitating elections, not making decisions on priorities. Mm. What do they know? You know, I could sit down and say, well, you know, I mean, I've studied this country for 14 years. I know it's 600-year history, this and that. I make the ideal plan for 34,000 villages in Afghanistan. They would have had to wait 34,000 years. Or I say, look, these are the parameters of design. This is the playing field. These are the rules. They will decide, and we will monitor and reflect and learn together. Then there was the question of the ministry. This was one of the weakest ministries in Afghanistan's history, particularly in the last 30 years. And it's now turned into one of the strongest ministries because the program created the capability. But of course, you know, I brought Minister Atmar, what impressed me as one of the most important leaders would emerge from the Afghan civil society. And I'd missed him in Peshawar when I was in Peshawar. So we were in a conversation one night when I was chief advisor, both national security and national economic advisor to the president in the first 5 months. And he was extremely critical of the government. And I liked him because of that, because you know, the man has immense talent. So the day before the new cabinet was being selected, I went to him and I said, will you come to join the cabinet? Fortunately, accepted. And he brought with him an enormously talented people. So within no time, it became a leading ministry. The moral of the story: international community gets development totally wrong, because it's a series of stale answers that they keep repeating. They don't know how to do design thinking. They always apply a previously planned model because their leaders are not innovators. They're not leaders, they're bureaucrats. Two, they have very little trust in the capability of social agents to think independently. Three, they go for intermediaries where rhetorically, they say all the right things, but their practice does not correspond. And fourth, they have all these preconceptions regarding capacity. That capacity means to them their type of capability. I don't need your type of capability, their type of capability. We need the type of capability to problem solve. And lastly, in terms of conflict, long conflict environments, they misjudge the people's capability for innovation. People who've lived with long-term conflict are some of the most innovative entrepreneurial people on earth. They have to live between day and night, between gray and white and black. They have to keep maneuvering. And these are people, you know, who are problem solvers. And the other part with the international community's developmental approaches, that they confuse literacy with capability. They think that literacy is a prerequisite of capability. There's no relationship between literacy. Do we know that Alexander was literate? Yeah, probably, he was a student of Aristotle. But Akbar? No. I mean, one of the most important empire builders, he was probably dyslexic but he couldn't. We need to understand that leadership and knowledge takes very different forms. In bookish knowledge, technically learned through drilling, is not the same as social knowledge. And if we really harness social knowledge, and if we can design the parameters of human action, it's far better than to over-regulate. Because if you're thinking that every nook and cranny can be thought through, no human has that kind of capability. But that's the heritage of the bureaucratic industrial era. Because you wanted military planning, top-down, detailed to everything. I think it was a huge gamble. But $1 billion gone to the Afghan villages, I think, has been much more efficiently spent than any other $1 billion spent in this country. Of course, the other part, which is unfortunate, is I designed national solidarity in phases, and they're stuck in phase one. So there's a stalemate. Now they're running out of innovation.
Mm-hmm. In designing the program, Dr. Ghani, were there any models or any innovations in particular that you had looked at while coming up with the design for the program?
The name I'd forgotten came from Mexico. President Salinas, had done his PhD in Harvard on village solidarity and ran a program from there. Jonathan Fox has written an editor book, but they completely repressed it. It's only later. The ideas came from several places. One is Canada. The concept of national program is a distinctively Canadian innovation as a vehicle of nation building. Because I'd done comparative studies on citizenship. In Canada, the remotest part are connected to a tissue of rights and obligations of citizenship. In this national program model is the key. There's some literature, Banton in particular, is written on this. If you look at Fixing Failed State, there are references to that. The second area was Spain after World War II. There's a Spanish priest who started a company called Mondragon. And Mondragon was that it really changed from a social enterprise to one of the largest corporations in history. And had I remained at finance or in the government, which I refused after the end of 2004, but a lot of reflection of World Bank experience and global experiences on citizenship went into this.
Just a final comment, Dr. Ghani, on what advice would you give others who are looking to implement something similar in their country?
They need to think outside the box. They need to know their country. And they need to really understand that designing a national program is very different than building a developmental project. The developmental institutions are a victim of project model thinking. And the late McNamara, Robert McNamara, did exactly with World Bank what he did. He made it Fordist. It's a standard cookie cutter approach. So Fordist thinking is just the opposite of design. Ford himself was one of the greatest design thinkers on earth. Because again, if you look into the biography, I mean, some of his thinking was totally out of the box. So he could design the parameters of an assembly line for a complex product and simplify it. But in others, when you standardize it, you lose. And they become victims, so one project, et cetera, et cetera. They need to think through, and they need to think functions and levels of government in their interrelationship very carefully. I did not have time, unfortunately, at that time, to reach the district, the municipality. I had the opportunity to reshape about 5 ministries in the fiscal and monetary system, but I did not have the opportunity to reach to the municipality in the province, in the district. So national solidarity was supposed to be followed by district level, municipal. Simultaneity was a problem. And if you had the team in the range of thinking, then addressing, we have 5 levels of governance, all 5 of them together, which is what we hope to do now, would have had a range of multiplying effect that you could have not really believed. But we did what we could at that.
Thank you so much for that.
Pleasure. And thank you for...